welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is live call-in radio. We have an open phone line. Number is 800-465-8770. We're here to talk about the stock market and the economy and those related items. So if you have questions about something in your portfolio, or you have been had a suggestion from your friendly neighborhood financial advisor, or perhaps your friendly website, that you should be putting something new in there instead of what you have, and you want a second opinion, we can take a shot at it, see if we can. We're very likely to have an opinion. I mean, that's
we'll tell you
a
something,
far stretch. Anyway, we're going to talk to us today, 800-465-8770. We'll get you into the queue, and Paul will let us know and remind us, if we don't see the note, that you are on the line. We will be looking forward to speaking with you. You can register for the December 4th stock market update at IRIRadio.com, IRIRadio.com. Week in review goes out normally on Mondays, kind of update on various subjects of interest during the week. If you do not receive that and would like to at least get an initial copy, send us an email, help at IRIRadio.com. That'll give us your address, your email address. We need your first and last name in the body of the email so we can add you to Constant Contact, which makes it very easy. One click to unsubscribe, which would make you an exceptional person because so few do. And we need put week in review in the subject line so we'll know what you're writing about. Anyway, here we are, live radio, 800-465-8770. So, Perry, one of the things that's been on the news has nothing to do with finance, and that has been there's been a lot of trial news here, so I'm going to play a little game with you, which so you're on trial.
What can I win? Oh, I cannot go to jail. Okay, this is good. Yes.
Okay, well, there's no penalty if you really mess up.
Takes the pressure off. All right.
So, Mr. Sykes,
yes
or no, when your stock account goes up, are you happy?
Yes.
Mr. Sykes, yes or no, when your real estate prices go up, are you happy?
Again, yes.
Mr. Sykes, when you find out that your income has gone up, are you happy?
Definitely, yes.
Then, Mr. Sykes, can you explain why you're depressed?
Right. That's where that ends up. That's the problem with what's going on out there right now.
Yeah, it is. Investor sentiment, consumer sentiment is, well, it's not quite in the tank, but it's really low. It's been lower than it has been in a long time. And here we are looking at an economy with an all-time high in GDP, an all-time high in stock prices. Well, okay, so NASDAQ set a new all-time high on Friday. The S&P intraday missed the all-time high by less than a dollar.
It was close, yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much all-time high. Now, the Dow has a lot of energy, still has a lot of energy stocks in it, so it's having a harder time to get back there. But household net worth is up. Real estate prices are up. Corporate profits are up. But nobody's happy. I mean, these are amazing statistics when we think of where we were just a year ago. My goodness, now, there was a lot of reason to be depressed
closed.
A year ago.
Sure, everything was, nothing was open, everything was shut down, the economy was at a standstill, and since the reopening has continued on here, things are just, you know, booming, really. They're looking really good, but people have this overwhelming kind of overarching, like you said, almost depression about what's out there right now.
So when you take a look at the various polls on consumer sentiment, and they're none of them are pretty, and we've actually, and maybe the issue here is who is actually seeing an improvement in their condition, their overall condition, and they recognize it, and it is very divergent because it's the top 1% and the bottom 1%, the people at the bottom of the economic pay scale are getting better and more significant pay raises on a percentage basis than anybody else. And part of it is because they have a newfound freedom to quit their job and go to one that pays more money. If they want to work, there's a place to work, and they can easily go around the corner and make another 50 cents, another buck and a half. And this keeps going up. You know, pretty soon they can get $3, $4, $5 increase in pay. It's just a function of how long this continues. But a lot, and then the one percenters, you know, if it goes up and if they're getting money for gaining from the market, like Elon Musk. So he's another $500 billion richer. I don't think it's going to change his pay scale.
Not going to change his life a lot.
His lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, in reading about him, he sold all his California mansions and he moved to Austin and he lives in a small manufactured home. You'd think with all his money and, yep. Fox Business is running on my extra computer here off on the side during the day. And they have these new shows about multi-million-dollar homes and the people are looking for their dream home and stuff. In this morning's show, they're showing houses that are 16,000 square feet on 140 acres. And you think, well, anybody could afford that would be Elon, right?
Right.
But he's not.
He's not interested.
As much wealth as he has, he's saying, that doesn't make life. I got other things that drive me. And those other things are what actually make you happy. But for people who are on the bottom of the pay scale, being able to quit and get a better job without having to go on unemployment for an extended period of time, hoping that a job opening will show up, that is promising that there's a better future for them.
Sure, that's super liberating to be able to say, I can make a change.
It's the people in the middle of that, and that's a big middle from 1% to 1%.
Yeah, that's everybody else.
The middle 98.
The rest of us, yeah.
They're having a harder time trying to figure out what's going on here. You know, this just doesn't feel right, and somehow maybe I got a pay raise, wasn't that much, and besides which, my coffee is costing me more money. I almost can't afford to go to Starbucks anymore.
By the day, it keeps going up along with other things. But that may be part of it where people are just, in the middle are noticing that, hey, everything's getting more expensive. And, I can't quit my job three times a year because of what I do. And so it's not quite as liberating for them. And that may be part of why people in the middle are feeling not quite as rosy as the people at the top and the bottom.
So we don't go to the coffee shop and buy coffee anymore. We just don't. We do it here at home. Grind our own, make our own. But if you're going to the coffee shop, if you haven't seen price hikes yet, they are on the way. The Arabica coffee, which comes from South America, is up more than 4%, which is puts it at almost the highest level in a decade. We've talked about this before.
Right.
I mean, South America not only is a major exporter of coffee, but they export a whole lot of other agricultural products, and they've had a massively terrible seasonal weather problems, droughts. I mean, they have insufficient rainfall to keep the Amazon River high enough to float their barges downstream. That's a drought, and the Amazon River is drying up.
Amazon's going down. That really does point it out. And then you on top of that, you put in all of the transportation foul ups that are going on right now with the snarled delivery of container ships, and now the increased costs of moving that coffee anywhere, and everything else too, and that just adds on another layer of pricing increases, and that's how we get inflation kicking in.
Now we've got sugar pushing prices up, cocoa's pushing prices up, oranges prices pushing prices up. So along with the droughts in South America, we have massive flooding from torrential rain problems in Asia, which has knocked out a whole bunch of production, some of which was being exported and other of which means that they can't produce enough for their own people, particularly in China. So China's become a major buyer of most everything agricultural or carbon fuel. because they need energy, and their coal mines got flooded, so they can't produce power and heat and something essential to keep their population from rebelling. However, without any firearms, it's pretty hard to rebel and get very far.
It gets tough, but that does keep them, that keeps them up at night. If you have a billion hungry people, that's a problem. So they do try to stay on top of that, and they're scrambling like everyone else. But it's just this little perfect storm of the global engine restarting. Nobody's got enough stuff. It's really hard to get anything moved around, and it's going to be a little more prolonged than anyone thinks right now.
So that consumer sentiment disenchantment is related to the two things that probably the two big variables in a typical household would be food. Food, groceries, and gasoline. How do you get around? Well, particularly for young families, which are usually on the lower end of the pay scale to begin with, lack of experience, lower end jobs, haven't been able to climb the corporate ladder yet, may not have finished their education yet, and now they've got kids to feed, baby clothes are getting expensive, and you're looking at all of this stuff and saying, how am I going to make ends meet? That's when you look at those things, that kind of explains why consumer sentiment is in the dumps. While when you look at the economic numbers that the Fed's looking at, what's to worry about?
Yep, we're moving. You know, we're moving along, and things are actually percolating pretty well right now, even with the backlog of stuff, things that can't get to market as they should. Things are still doing pretty well and are going to continue. It's just going to take some time for that part of the economy to work itself out. Supply chains are not going to come back online, and shortages that exist are not just going to evaporate. It's going to take a while for all that to transpire, and it probably will, but it's just not going to be quick as the Fed was anyway making a sound. Even they're starting to moderate their view on inflation also. So it's just something to keep an eye on, and you know, keep in the back of your mind that, hey, you know what, things are a little uneven right now, but things are at least heading the right direction, and we can hope that it continues to do so. We are up against our first break here. We'll have to get out of here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have a monthly market update. The next one is coming up Saturday, December 4th, 9 o'clock in the morning. It's online. You can register for that at IRIRadio.com. Just go to IRIRadio.com, go to the webinar page, and click that registration link. You'll get an email back, and on December 4th, just click that link and you'll be live online with us. You'll be able to see the charts we're looking at. It can really give you some clarity as to what we think is going on out there. And if you have any questions about anything going on in your portfolio, it's a really good time to get a second opinion about the market in general or specific securities you'd like a second opinion on. It's a great time for that. Again, you can register for that at IRIRadio.com. If you have questions for us this afternoon, we'd love to talk to you. Feel free to give us a call, 800-465-8770. That is 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at irradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
In the wind, that's where we are. We've got lots of things that are before us that just simply don't make a lot of sense. The inflation problem is real. The Fed is kind of caving in to admitting that. But what are they going to do? Well, with Mr. Powell's renomination in the air, he's been interviewed by the president, but so has Lael Brainard. She's been interviewed, and there's a real debate about whether or not Powell's going to be able to keep his position. It is unlikely that he's going to take an aggressive stand to deal with inflation before that decision's made, because as we've discussed on repeated programs in my regular tomes, I have addressed the fact that I believe Mr. Powell and the Fed have painted themselves into a corner, and the paint's still wet. There's no way to get out with messing up the game. You have inflation, and the way that you normally deal with inflation, which we've learned from history, starting with particularly with Paul Volcker back in 1979, is you raise interest rates. And in spite of the congressional complaints at the time, he aggressively continued to raise them until inflation started back down. And we have had nearly 40 years of disinflationary environment, which has been a boon for the bond market, the stock market, corporate profits, real estate prices, employment. Falling interest rates have been a panacea for our economy, and we have led the world as a result. Now, how are you going to deal with the current inflation? You raise interest rates, and what happened under Paul Volcker in the first year of Mr. Reagan's presidency is you get a recession.
Which is part of the idea, right? We're trying to slow everything down. But one thing Paul Volcker didn't do was he didn't run the Fed with any bent to the political side, and that looks like it's happening less and less. The pressures that are being brought upon Chairman Powell right now are largely political, which is why he's not going to start raising rates and shutting the economy down prior to the next round of elections. And that shouldn't be part of anything he's thinking about. It should just be the economics, but that's just no longer the case.
Well, part of the problem that he faces is that his job not only is to have a stable currency, but is to maintain full employment.
Right.
Which Congress gave to them because they decided finally after years, decades, that they didn't know how to do that. They figured it's kind of like the old cereal ad. Give it to Mikey. He'll eat anything.
Yeah.
Give it to the Fed.
They'll figure it out. Yeah, we can't fix it. Give it to the Fed. Let them worry about that. They don't even really have any tools for that. So it's crazy that that should be part of their purview to watch over. But it is.
So if they raise interest rates and cause a recession, employment is not at full levels yet. We last saw that under President Trump. But that's a fact that the media doesn't want to discuss. We couldn't go back there, except that's the objective. Let's get back to 3.5% full employment. Mm-hmm. And a recession would just kill whatever economic recovery looks like it's occurring at the present time. So he can't raise interest rates in that because of that problem, which means he has to do something. What can he do about inflation?
Right.
Well, he can start unwinding slowing down is what they're going to do. Slow down their purchases in the bond market and give the bond market a little less support. And it's just a little less. It's not very much. So it's unlikely to really disrupt the bond market yet. But sometime next year, if he goes through with full withdrawal of the quantitative easing program, which we've had the benefit of since 2009, that is very likely to create massive volatility and a problem for the bond market. And if that's a problem, then the stock market has at least a temporary problem until we figure out what the new deal is and whether or not interest rates are going to be hiked. Rising interest rates in the early phase are not a problem for the stock market. They are always a problem for bond market investors, but continually rising rates become a problem for the stock market. So it's always a question of what's your game plan? How are you going to make decisions given this scenario? Do you know what you're going to do?
And the Fed, thankfully, has said they're going to move slowly and they're going to give everyone plenty of notice. There aren't going to be any surprises. So at least there's not going to be anything jarring to the market. But like you said, Don, eventually even small increases in the interest rate that continue eventually begin to take their toll also. So we won't have any quick disruptions, but over the longer run, there's going to be a slowdown. In fact, that's part of what they're looking for. That's the way to slow down the inflation rate.
So you want to talk to us today? We do have an open phone line. Got to wake up Paul in there, make the phone ring, 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. So as we look at all the stuff that can be viewed as discouraging, higher inflation, not enough people working. There's lots of issues, you know, high energy costs, having to go back to the Saudis and Russia for our energy. And did you know that Europe actually exports gasoline to the eastern United States? I mean, we are importing gasoline from Europe. I mean, and who made that decision?
Yeah, why would that be happening? Yes.
Yeah, we got a call from Don in Redmond. Don, you're on the line. Glad to have you out there. Thanks for taking time to call, listen to us, and take the time to call in. You are live with Don and Perry.
Yeah, hi, guys. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Okay. So, you know, you were mentioning at the beginning of your show that the NASDAQ and the S&P are at or near record highs. So I know you don't have a crystal ball, but do you have a sense for how likely a market correction is, say, in the next few months?
Well,
that would
he
really
recognizes,
be good to know.
Yeah. He recognizes we don't have a crystal ball, right, but he wants us to take the dust off the one that's sitting on the back, kind of the back closet.
There you go.
There you go.
Okay, so when we are not economists.
Thank goodness.
Are not fundamental investors. We are simply looking at what's going on in the market on charts, because charts and price action tell you what investors are thinking. The brief little pullback we've had at this point in time, this last month, is pretty normal from a seasonality standpoint. This time of year, it is not uncommon to see a little bit of pullback. But I think the NASDAQ's had 47 new highs this year, not in the last couple of decades. It's this year. I don't know what the count is for the S&P or the Dow, it's a lot.
Yeah.
The trends are supportive. Corporate profits are supportive. Investor sentiment is a little queasy. There is new money flow coming into the market, and a lot of that happens to be from young retail investors who are investing speculatively, and when the market does tank, they are going to get their, they're going to get something handed to them, which will be a shock. Because they've never seen a bear market. There's another one coming. I just don't see it being an imminent problem. But the question is always, do you have a process to make a decision when things you own probably not suddenly quit working? Most of the time when markets turn into bears from bulls, they don't happen in a single day. They happen over months. What happens and we can go back to the 08 market, it actually topped out in 07, and the real estate market topped out in 06, and then it rolls over. It goes through an extended period of trying to make new highs, and it never gets there. You go back to the tech bubble. We think of March of 2000 as the high of the tech bubble, which is true, but the collapse didn't come until the end of 01 and into 02, and then that became very obvious. So it takes this time. And the question is that while you own things, as this market is topping, when they start giving up their ground, based on how much you're willing to give up, do you have a plan to exit to preserve your capital? Because there's nothing more important than preserving your capital. Because if you lose it, you're out of the game. So when that's going to happen, I don't know. Is it going to happen? I'm pretty convinced it will. I just don't think right now that we're going to see that happen, certainly not before the end of the year. And seasonality would suggest that it's not going to happen before the end of the year. We're looking at the Christmas rally. I mean, that's pretty typical. And we have strong retail sales numbers that have come through. So businesses would have to be sitting around saying, nobody's showing up at my doorstep to buy anything. I mean, what are we going to do with all this inventory? And that's not what you hear from corporations. They're saying, I'm having a hard time stocking it because the people keep taking whatever they can find. That's good corporate profits. Plus, they're able to bump their prices up and nobody's complaining. They're saying that's okay. You know, if that's what it costs, I'll take two of them. I'll take three of them because I can get them now, and I know my friend or my family needs one too, and they haven't found one. So give them to me.
And Don, you know, don't need to tie the possibility of a market pullback to the elevated levels the market's at now. Things can stay elevated for a long, long time. And most of the time, new record highs means that the market is the place to be right now, and there's more money coming in. So just because a market's at an all-time high doesn't necessarily mean it has to pull back now. It could take years. We just have no idea.
Well, if it was at all-time highs meant that we were going to have a pullback, we should have had a major pullback last decade, because we've been pushing through new all-time highs with a few brief interruptions, 2015, 2018, a major one last year, but that didn't last very long because the government spent $11 trillion to keep us last year.
Well, gentlemen, good comments. I appreciate everything you said. I only disagree with one thing. I don't think people are too excited about the rising prices of things.
Yeah, interesting.
I would agree with you. That's why the consumer sentiment is down. But in spite of not being happy about it, they're paying them. That's from a corporate standpoint, corporate profits. They're still buying the stuff. You're still going to the gas station and paying $4 a gallon for gasoline. You're not staying home and saying, well, I'm not going to pay $4. No, they're not going to get my money. I'm not going to fill up my gas. I got to fill up my gas tank. Okay, I'm not happy about it, but I'm spending the money, and that's the issue that's keeping the economy running.
And you got to eat, or you're going to pay whatever the grocery store is charging.
Correct. Yep. And you got to buy what they have on the shelf. I mean, I was in Fred Meyer the other day for a cleanser for frying pans and stuff. I like Barkeeper's Friend. I've been buying it for years. They don't have it. In fact, when it comes to cleansers, they have one brand, Comet. If you don't want Comet, you're out of luck. I mean,
welcome
use
to
your
the
fingernails.
Supply chain issues. Yeah, that's what happens. Everything
well,
slows
you,
down. And
you
they
know,
can't
I,
keep it on
I
the
happen
shelf.
To have a bottle of Barkeeper's Friend. Maybe we could work out a deal.
Okay, as long as it's free shipping. Don, that was a great line.
Thank you.
We got to go to a break.
We are at the bottom of the hour here. Yeah, we're going to have to get out of here for a break. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our monthly market update coming up on December 4th. You can register for that at iriradio.com. And if you'd like to get our week in review, which is our weekly email newsletter, just send us an email. Send it to help@iriradio.com. Put your first and last name in the body letter and just put week in review in the subject line. You'll begin receiving that on Monday. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You're listening to Investor Resources. Check out our website at iriradio.com and log on for a free report. That's iriradio.com. Don and Perry are waiting to answer your questions now at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined.
Well, we heard a lot about big spenders this week, because they are all throughout House of Representatives. And
we're talking really big.
President's really happy about it. And with all of the protestations about this is for the little people, which we have heard since the campaigns, it turns out that the biggest tax cut looks like it's going to be to high-income people in the high-tax states. So currently, I don't know if New York's the highest tax state, but you get California, New York, New Jersey. And,
they're all
you know,
up
the,
there, sure.
They're all really high. One of the things that happened under the tax legislation with President Trump was that the tax deduction for your state income and real estate taxes and sales taxes was unlimited. I mean, you just got to deduct them, which basically means people in low income tax states or zero income tax states were funding the people's extravagant, wasted spending in those high, expensive, poorly run states. And in this bill, that $10,000 limitation is going to be $80,000. Who benefits most from that? People in high incomes in high tax states, paid for by the little guys. Yep, we're taking care of the little guys, all right. That's part of the Democrats' new party, giving the wealthy a big slap on the back saying, send us more money to get us reelected and take care of you. Yep.
Smells just like politics, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we got the new spending bill coming up, $150 billion for affordable housing, $100 billion for immigration-related programs like flying airplanes in the middle of the night and dropping off illegal immigrants into towns where nobody's been notified they're coming. We are expanding and extending the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, which was not happily received by most people, where they don't have choices anymore. And they're going to take over the healthcare industry and the drug business and mandate lower costs, which may be what we see as a result in China and Russia, where their vaccines run by the governments have very low efficacy rates in the countries that could afford to buy them because they were cheap. You want to pay for government-created vaccinations. Just look at China and Russia for how that works.
That's a relatively terrifying thought. They don't need to be anywhere near that kind of stuff.
Well, what are you doing in high inflation society as far as investing? Because according to the news headlines, with inflation at 6.2%, this is back with a vengeance. However, we do have to say, this is not the extent of inflation that we had in the 70s. And there are a lot of people in today's population who are too young to have been there.
And these days, that means it didn't happen. there's no institutional memory anymore. So if it didn't happen to you personally, it's not that important.
Well, this is not related directly to the inflation, but you just opened up a rabbit trail, Perry.
Sorry.
If you haven't been there, it hasn't happened. Yeah. You know, that's most financial advisors today.
Absolutely. So many new financial advisors out there, they don't really know what a big bear market looks like.
Because they've never been through
one. Nope, never seen one.
And last year would be typically their first experience. And it only lasted a couple of months, and the Fed and the government combined put $11 trillion into the economy, so we recovered very rapidly. The Fed just didn't quit spending money when we got back up to prior market levels. But we go back to the 2008-2009 meltdown, and that market collapse actually is more than just stock market, because the real estate market collapsed, the mortgage market collapsed. I mean, there was a lot of bad news that spread throughout the economy. That was a bear market. Many, many financial advisors who'd been in the business a long time threw in the towel, partly because their clients lost a ton of money and they thought they had been doing the right thing. They had been following industry standard best practices, diversifying across asset classes, rebalancing accounts, following modern portfolio theory that was supposed to protect them in bear markets. And it does not work. It didn't in 08. It didn't in the 2001-2002 tech bubble. It didn't in 87. It doesn't work. In fact, I'm reading my current book that I'm reading is Safe Harbor. And in there, the author references Harry Markowitz, who by 1979 had totally rejected his own theory for portfolio construction. But by then, it was industry standard. It was too late to do anything about it.
And it was built into to all of those brokerage firms as a major, in fact, the primary piece of marketing that they do. That's their marketing tool. So they're not going to suddenly pull the plug on that and say, well, let's look at this a different way because we're not sure this is working well. It's like, nope, this is we've bet the farm on this, and we're going to just keep on rolling down this road. Whether it's the best thing for clients or not, it's the best thing they could find for their firm, and that's why it's still in there.
Yeah, it's great legal defense when they get sued.
Oh, yeah.
But it even Markowitz says that this really isn't designed to make money, and it's not designed to protect clients' accounts during market declines. You have to do something else, which is why we no longer use it. I mean, the last time around, the 08, 09 market, we said, there's something wrong here. And we spent a lot of time, money, and research trying to figure out what was wrong with the theory. And I mean, we basically went back to long standard practices that have been in use since the beginning days of the market. You go back to Livermore and what he was doing. And while it's been refined a bit because of technology, it's still basically own leaders and sell laggards. If it's not working, it's just like talking to Don a few minutes ago on the call. Want to know about when's the next bear market? We don't know that, but I do know what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. When what you own isn't working, you don't hang on to it on the premise that someday it will, because that's just hope. That's not process. And it's process that protects your capital. So we had to change process and identify things that were actually working, and then be willing to rotate, admit that you made a mistake. You thought this was going to work. It looked good, but it's not working. So the question is, how bad will you let it get before you say enough's enough? I'm going to protect my capital.
Because if you have that pie chart, if your advisor handed you the pie chart, they're not going to do anything about it. They are not going to make a significant change to your portfolio. They will tinker around the edges and do almost nothing. And if everything's losing money, it's all going to stay in your portfolio, and all those losses end up in your account. And that's the part that is, it's the worst. Like you said earlier, Don, preserving capital is so important. That's the best way to build wealth. You don't have to beat the market every year. Just don't write it down in any of the big down years. You're going to be way ahead of the game, and we focus on that. And that is not what happens with the pie chart portfolio. They just, wherever it goes, they go with it. And that's just not good enough.
So we started here with what do you do in an inflationary environment for your portfolio? There's a study here that Perry found about how asset classes work adjusted for inflation, because that's the real after inflation return. That is what you're going to be able to spend somewhere downstream. And there's always extremes. So knocking out the extremes that were more than 20%, plus or minus in a given year, looking at what's that middle band that repeats more often. And when we do that, we find that the highs and lows for commodities, gold, international stocks, real estate, S&P, and even, treasury bills never get quite as low. But the highs, they get some really big years, as do corporate bonds, which seems to surprise people.
Almost the always, issue, right?
The issue is, none of this happens consistently. This stuff rotates in and out of favor, and there can be wild swings in volatility. And if you can't handle the volatility, the standard process is you just diversify into other things that aren't quite as volatile, and you gut it out. We say volatility must happen or you never get any upside. You must have volatile markets or there's no growth. The question is, what are you going to do on the downside volatility? Again, it's protect capital. And do you have a process to do that?
You have to. You have to have the process. That's the key. You have to have a disciplined process that you can apply when markets are falling apart and not be afraid to do it. We are up against our break here, Don. We got to get out of here. The last break of the show. We got plenty of time to get your question on the board. If you have a question for us today, give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. When we come back, we are going to continue discussing how to invest in an inflationary market. What can you do about it? What can you expect? Stay with us. We will be right back.
This is Investor Resources, the program that sheds new light on your investment strategies. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at irradio.com. That's help at irradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
Make it go higher. Make it go higher. That's what we want the market to do. And actually, I think it's on its way. I mean, we're moving sideways. We get up these new time highs and people kind of take a look and say, do corporate profits make any sense? Are these valuations okay? I mean, what on earth is going on here? And then we get fear of missing out, which brings money into the market and it moves up. And there's still a lot of money on the sidelines. We were talking about inflation and the supply chain problem as a part of that cause. One of the things that we didn't address with regard to inflation, you mentioned, Perry, that the supply chain, now people are thinking within a couple of years it's going to work its way out. That's very likely to be the case. It may take a little longer. Some of the stuff may work out a little faster because some of the big companies are renting airplanes to avoid the shipping container ship problem. Companies will adapt. Plus, the shipping business is adopting technology for scheduling and keeping track of their containers. This reminds me of the early 80s when UPS went to Ford and helped them keep track of their cars. Ford did not know where their cars were on various railroads and various wholesale lots on the way to dealers. They lost track of their cars. And UPS is in the logistics business. They figured out and gave them software to solve that problem. And the shipping industry is now doing that. They're way behind the time. Well, that's going to happen in other industries. And particularly what we see it going on is in financial technology.
Sure.
Now, if you go back to 2009, I remember when my local bank first introduced an ATM machine. And I said to myself, I will never use that.
Yes, of course.
Well, guess how long that lasted.
Yeah, exactly. First time you needed some cash at 10 p.m., it's like, well, wait a minute. The machine's still there. I just go get it. This is great. Yeah.
So anyway, that changed the banking business, and there's more changes coming. And it's not just in the banking industry. There's all sorts of things that are happening in the way you pay for product. How about Zelle? You know, we've got PayPal. You've got other forms of you're on your phone app. You've got various apps that you can use to pay for. That's financial technology. That's changing stuff. Restaurants, local restaurant no longer takes orders on a piece of paper. They have tablets that take the orders and they bring you an electronic bill to sign. What does that do? It reduces staffing errors in the kitchen because the order's right there. It's automatically in front of the cook. I mean, they don't have as many returned plates because the order is wrong. They need fewer staff. That makes the margins better. There's better accounting for this stuff. This is happening industry-wide. I mean, across industries. And all of that is going to improve business operations. And that helps longer-term corporate profit growth, which helps the stock market. Now, what is going to hurt it? Massive debt is a problem. Printing money and destroying the value of the U.S. dollar is a potential problem. So far, the dollar has been ignoring the new debt, and not all of the stuff that's proposed has been passed. Got to get through the House so far. Got to get through the Senate, and there's a lot of objections there. So we don't know how much more due debt's there, but we just added $11 trillion this past year. Well, and that's massive.
It's hard to get your mind around numbers that big. And they say, this never happened before. We've never added $11 trillion to anything. And here that was just pouring money on the U.S. economy. So not only nobody really knows what the longer term effects that going to be, but you start thinking about how you're going to soak up all that money and get it back out of the economy because it can't just stay there. And again, no one knows how that's exactly going to occur. So those are big unknowns. But the But the productivity increases, technology adoption and increasing productivity is very deflationary. And that's a good thing right now.
Well, and it has been since, interest rates have been deflationary since 1979. Technology has been materially deflationary since the tech bubble, so that'd be the late 90s. And this is just another leg up as far as the economy, productivity, what will be wage gains, because employees will be more productive, profits will be better, they'll get paid more. That's how this works. So deflation is on the other end of this spiral. We just don't know exactly when it's going to start showing up, but it's several years downstream, and this will reverse. We'll go back into a longer-term trend of at least disinflation. That would be my expectation. Will it be a smooth ride? It never is.
Never is. And if we had an economist here right now, they would start explaining exactly why. But everyone
knows. But we wouldn't want to listen.
No, we wouldn't want to listen. And we know, just from having seen it happen before, everyone has seen economic disruption happening in more and more places. And it's difficult at times because older companies just get washed away. And the disrupting technology or company that comes in just takes control, and lives change, and who has jobs changes, and what you need to have a job changes. But those are all things that the adaptations bring more productivity, and it's positive for the economy long term.
So there are some longer term inflationary things that are likely to stick on the lower half of the wage scale. They're getting wage increases, mm-hmm. and those are fairly sticky. John Deere companies, labor's been on strike for a month. They just signed a new contract. They get a 10% increase the first year, 5% increase in years 2 and 3, plus they get $8,500 just to show back up at work and let's get this thing underway. That job contract, that labor contract, is not going to walk away anytime soon. That probably ever. I mean, so it sets a new floor.
It'll be built upon, not torn down.
Every other union contract is going to be looking at that and saying, we can too. And for the years that government's been arguing that $15 an hour should be the minimum wage, that's minimum wage. Businesses adapted, so that's what we need to pay in order to get people to show up at work. They're paying it. Government didn't have to do that. Corporate free enterprise adapted to reality with what they need to pay to get people to work. There's still argument that it's not a living wage, but what's a living wage? Depends upon what your cost of living is. If you're trying to buy one of those multi-million dollar mansions that are on Fox Business on the weekends, I don't think $15 an hour is going to cut it. It's not going to cut it. But anyway, technology is going to change business as it has over the last 30 years. It's going to change it even more over the next 30 years. And it's going to happen faster. And that's good for the stock market. What's bad for the stock market are politics and the federal intervention trying to play with markets. I mean, we'd be better off with half the government that we have.
Definitely. And capitalism always works better than least interference. We just saw it on the phone. Don calls in and tells you, Don, that you need some barkeepers rent. And he said he's got some. Let's cut a deal right now. That was live capitalism right here. You need it. I've got it. I'll sell it to you. That's the way it works. And the less there is in the way, the less friction on that transaction, the better.
Oh, well, that's certainly true. Now, not everybody wins from new technology. There are always losers, and I would suggest that there are a whole bunch of new retail investors who are going to lose their shirts when the crypto mania gets sorted out. There's going to be a winner. Bitcoin's the dominant run right now, but they have a lot of competition. And then there are a number of these crypto coins that are just frauds. And
absolutely,
when they come into when they're disclosed, it's going to change people's minds about how they deal with these things, because there's nothing backing them, and there's no regulation. You have no protection, and you don't know who you're going to sue.
You want to talk about the Wild West? That's where it is right now. It's in the cryptocurrency world. But
when you think of one of the richest people around, that's Elon Musk. Do you know that a couple of his original partners never became billionaires?
I thought that was fascinating. Just because, you know, people always look back with the woulda, coulda, shoulda. I wish if I just bought 10 grand worth of Tesla, you know, I just wish I'd seen it coming. Well, there were some of the original shareholders of Tesla that didn't see it coming either until Elon Musk took over and really drove that company through the ceiling.
Yeah, one of them, Ian Wright, quote, "I own no Tesla stock. Of course, I could not imagine a $1 trillion valuation."
Who would have thought? Yeah, exactly.
Hey, you want to register for our December 4th webinar, Stock Market Update, go to IRIRadio.com. That's IRIRadio.com, lower left-hand corner of the website. You can register a couple of clicks and your email and name, and you'll be set to get a link to join us. If you can't join us live on the 4th, then we'll send you a replay link. You can watch it on your own time. Still can write in and ask questions. Want to talk to us during the week? The number is 800-317-9119. That's 800-317-9119. If you want to get our weekend review, send us an email, help@irradio.com. We'll be back next week. Lord willing, God bless you, your family, and the United States of America. Have a great weekend.